Blog Talk Radio.
And will I wonder why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. Michael and I will share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about Michael, or myself, or forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, your co-hosts, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
Hi, and welcome to the show. It's good to be back. Thank you, Michelle, for filling in for me for the last couple of days while we were traveling and out and about, and my computer was in the shop. Today is Wednesday, Recovery Wednesday, November the 16th, 2016. And our call-in number is, our old number. And actually, for some reason, the switchboard is giving a different number than what we normally give. 516-418. Michael, do you have it there?
516-418-5786.
And press 1, and that'll put you in queue to talk to us. I'm going to have to do a chat with Blog Talk here because they've got a different guest calling number. So I'll find out what that's about. Michael, welcome. Okay, he asked me if I would talk while he finds his headset. So if you go to our website, www.whyagain.org, there's lots of information. I actually got an email this morning and was responding to it. Somebody in Central America who has found the work, and they're doing worksheets, and they get stuck, and they want to know what to do about it. So I was just typing an email to them, telling them they could go to the website, and being in Central America, if they didn't have the long distance to be able to call into the show, that they could Skype in, or they could link in with us on the internet and ask questions in the chat room. And then I also sent them the link to, if you click on the bullseye on their website, then it will take you to where the worksheets are, to where you can listen to MP3s of past radio shows where we've walked someone through doing a worksheet. And so there's just lots of tools out there. Over 5,000 pages, you could spend a lot of time just going around. And there's a set of blocks, like the bullseye is one of them, and the block that's right next to it on the right side, it shows a guy carrying a piano up 12 steps. And that takes you to the link of all the 12-step radio shows that we've done and some information on that and how to recover. And it's not just recovering from alcohol or drugs, but recovering to get back to being who we are designed to be. And the work, the basis of the work that we do is forgiveness, which is the greatest tool for recovering, and that is not letting another person off the hook for what they triggered in you, but it's going inside and removing whatever doesn't belong, removing the anger, the fear, the grief, the guilt, the pain, and get back to being, to recover your true self. And that's the core of this work. And today being Recovery Wednesday, I will go ahead and welcome Dr. Tim. And Gail, if you're on, if you would press 1, that'll throw you to the top of the switchboard. And we will start our discussions. I see Gail now. So, Dr. Tim, welcome.
Hi, Jeannie.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing quite well. I'm driving and heading back to my office. And the way I like to talk about it on Recovery Wednesday is I'm not recovering my true nature. I'm recovering my awareness. of my true nature. It can never go anywhere. I can never lose it. I'm made of this stuff called love. And I can get distracted quite easily by the culture I live in, by the conditioning of my family. And when I get distracted, I shift the focus of my thoughts over to something that's less than my true nature, and I create a false experience, a hallucination of myself as being less than my true nature of love. So I'm just going to recover my awareness. And the way I recover the awareness is two-prong approach. I focus on my true nature and breathe into it and remember times when I've connected to it and felt it. And the other thing is I use the tool of forgiveness to remove all of that old false conditioning and those false beliefs. So that's my two cents for the Recovery Wednesday. And here's hoping Gail's on because she knows a lot more about the 12-step and how it, that process and how it dovetails beautifully with all of the tools you and Michael teach.
That is a good catch on that, Dr. TM. Thank you. Yes, it's recovering our awareness of it. So thank you very much for that addition because you are absolutely right on that. And Gail is with us. Hey, how you doing, girl?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome, young lady.
Good morning.
How are you this morning? How are you this
morning?
I'm doing
well. How are you?
What's on your mind this morning? Good.
Well, I am in another city. I'm traveling as well. And I'm working with a lady that I sponsor, and she was living in a recovery home that was closer to where I'm from, and I decided to meet her where she is at now, and we've been to two meetings already, and we're going to be working on our eight-step list this afternoon at the library here, and so I'm just trying to figure out how to do the auxiliary cable and allow her to listen and for me to talk into my headset at the same time. I haven't figured that out yet. So that's what's going on for me. So right now she's just listening to my side of the conversation. But I concur with everything that Dr. Kim said. Absolutely. The awareness, you know, of who we truly are. We're recovering the awareness that we always have this, that we never lose it. And so I'm right there. The other thing that I would like to mention is it says someplace in the big book and in a vision for you, it's towards the end of the 164 pages that we call our basic text. It talks about creating the fellowship that we crave. And this was written in 1939. It was the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous was written, or actually it was published in 1939. It was written because the message was starting to get watered down. And so they're just like, we need to write a book. And also we can't meet everybody, you know, that may be afflicted with alcoholism. So we need to get a book published and we need to get it out there and we need to carry this message. And so that last part was about creating the fellowship that you crave was written to that one person that might have the book in their possession, and how are they going to be able to do the step-by-step program. And and it also is like you may meet some of us, you know. And so what I was told was when I got into the program was to create the fellowship that I craved, and that was to find my people. And not only am I finding my people in the Aramaic Forgiveness Program, but I'm also in the process of doing my work. I'm attracting people back into my life. And I would say probably in the past 7 days, there were two women that I used to sponsor that just, you know, disappeared for whatever reason that are coming back or have came back into my life. And that's just amazing. The people that I'm continuing to garner as you know, the Laws of Living group that meets every morning at 6:30. Those ladies in my life were continually to get stronger and stronger by practicing these tools, and then also the women in my life and the AA recovery modality. It's been amazing, and I'm not doing anything except for my work. I'm attracting them, and it's just been an amazing ride, especially the past 10 weeks or so after leaving Heartland. Even the couple weeks before going to Heartland and doing Laws of Living again, it's just been a process of attracting women into my life and having the honor and a privilege to work with them, no matter what spiritual modality it is. So that's what I wanted to contribute to the conversation.
Awesome. Awesome. Very cool. You know, it's interesting sometimes people, when they've got garbage going on in their life, say, you know, why isn't this working? It's like, it's working. It's working perfectly. We're creators, and we're going to attract whatever we're holding on to. And when we decide to let go of something, then it works on in exactly the same way, but the attraction is for something else. So, great, cool. That's an awesome thing to recognize, that level of responsibility and how to bring about recovery of friends in this case. Very cool. All right, well, I'll tell you what, why don't we let you get back to work and see if you can get the two-way conversation going there, and we'll carry on with a couple of other thoughts, and then if you're ready to chime back in again in a few minutes, you get that handled. By the way, does anybody have any direct input? I know I got a text last night that Tracy's surgery was successful. She was still in ICU. It was, I guess, a 7 or 8 hour surgery, and we're certainly holding the space, continuing to hold the space for Tracy. But have you heard anything more directly than what I got last night, Gail? Or
I have.
Okay, I'm asking the list again.
I have. I heard that her surgery was very successful. They were expecting her to be in ICU for up to 48 hours, and she is actually in a private room right now, from what I understand. And I think the original thinking was that she wasn't going to be able to go home until Monday. And now they're thinking that she's going to be able to go home a lot sooner than that. So I
awesome.
Think she's recovering a lot faster than what they originally expected. And I've been sending her Reiki and holding the space for her. I probably have sent at least 5 times to her already. Every time that I have a little bit of fear, it's like, okay, I could be with her by, you know, tapping into that particular spiritual modality and sending it to her. And I know that a lot of other people are holding the space for her as well. And that's just a huge testament what we can do when we're, you know, holding the space for somebody, how fast they can recover.
Absolutely. Nothing like community. Nothing like community. All right. Well, let's, today I kind of had a thought in regard to recovery that oftentimes people, especially people who have a lot of accumulated anger, a lot of experiences upon which they've blamed their anger, when you start talking to them about love, it becomes kind of a confusing conversation, because the response that I've often heard is, well, why should I love that person who did those terrible things to me? And I'll be the first one to say, I would never suggest you love that person. In fact, I would inform you that you can't love that person. You've never loved that person. And in fact, you've never loved anybody. Because love is not a verb. It's not something we do to each other. It's what we are. But I can strive to maintain the presence of love with someone who's behavior, at least in my perception, is way off base, way off, somewhere out in left field. And people say, well, but what's the practical use of that? Well, first of all, it leaves you at peace. Whatever somebody else is doing, it leaves you at peace. But it is in the active presence of love that truth becomes visible. So the active presence of love is literally the light in which truth becomes apparent, and that won't just be for your mind. But if you are powerfully connected to that space that we're talking about recovering, bringing in the awareness of that active presence of love that you are, and that is truly active in you rather than some form of hostility or fear being the active driver of perception, of behavior, of the whole physiological device we call a body-mind unit, then everybody in the space is going to be touched by it. And as they're touched by it, because of that law of resonance that we've talked about, it's going to tend to resonate that same energy in them. And the more that that active presence of love resonates in any mind, the more that mind is connected to the light in which truth becomes available. And so those aberrant brain cell projections that can keep us off base, literally in the presence of active love, begin to dissolve. And we and anyone in the space will begin to get free of them. Now, be careful that you don't attempt to do that so that you can change them, because if you do, your focus will be on changing them, and it won't be on the work that you need to do to bring forward the active presence of love. So while a side benefit can be that other people shift, the major core and the major reason for doing that piece of work or choosing to recover, and sometimes you'll have to do that recovery 100 times a minute to bring back the presence of love. Bring back the presence of love to your mind. Bring back the presence of love to your mind. And as you do, truth will become more apparent to everybody in the space. There will be a shift that will be extremely, extremely powerful. You know, we talked about the film. There's another powerful demonstration in the film Hacksaw Ridge. You know, we've spoken about that the last couple of days, and I'm not going to give anything away here. There's a little piece, but the principle is more important, and we're going to withhold every little piece so that somebody who hasn't seen it, if you need to cover your ears, then go for that. But it's really interesting, this young man who, again, in the film, he is the only person in the film who's functioning as a human being, who's functioning as the active presence of love. His soon-to-be wife is coming close to it, but she falls off the wagon a little bit too. But he's strong and steady there. And those who are confused in that space, those who don't understand, those who think he's stupid, think he's a moron, think he's a coward, want to destroy him, go through all of the gyrations that they go through. But then once they observe what the space that he is capable of, when all the big tough guys run away, he stays and rescues men from the battlefield. Once that occurs and they see the monumental feat that this young man has created as a result of being loved, it's interesting. They're called to go back into battle. And all these people who were all over him, trying to have him court-martialed, wanting to put him in prison, literally, physically, emotionally beating him up, deriding him, driving him into the ground as much as they could. Every one of them says, we're not going back into that battle until he says a prayer. Now, of course, they're using the culture's language, the non-being world's language about prayer. They think it's about some magic words. But what they're really saying is, we recognize a space this man holds, and in that space we recognize truth. And we recognize our safety. So here, all of these tough guys with their big mouths and their big guns and their, you know, we're going to go kill somebody, quietly wait for him to hold the space. Even as the commander saying, I told you to get into that battle 10 minutes ago. Why aren't you there? It's like, excuse me, sir, nobody's moving until this human being says it's okay to go. Powerful. The active presence of love turns on a light that the world seldom sees. And each of us has that light in us. And if you go back to Yeshua 2,000 years ago, you hear him saying, I am the light of the world. And then the only thing that changes is a pronoun, and he says, you are the light of the world. If you choose to recover the truth of who you are as the active presence of love, then you will be a light to the world. And in that light, truth will become apparent to everybody. There, to me, is the most practical aspect of doing whatever it takes to get to that space. It shifts everything. Any thoughts on that, Tim?
Just full agreement. You know, the idea that the light can shine through me, that I'm a conduit for this energy. This ties into, we've had a few conversations recently about people thanking me, and I say, well, you're very welcome and deserving, and then they say, but you are so wonderful, you are so good at this, and I say, well, that's missing the point. What I'm doing is asking to be shown, and that light of truth or that conduit of loving energy or that energy can flow through me because I'm getting who I think I am out of the way. And the more I'm just this open conduit, the more that light, that truth, that energy of creation, some call it love, can flow through me. So that's all I would add.
Absolutely. I'm with you. Well, let's check with Jeannie and see if we've got anything happening in the chat room or anybody with a hand up to the phone queue. Jeannie?
No, nobody has their hand up. And Michelle was saying that she went with several people to see Arrival last night and felt inspired. And nobody has their hand up, so if someone presses 1, we're here to support you.
Well, we had our support group last night, and to kind of dovetail on what Michael was talking about earlier, I would say we had one of our members, and she came in. We had two people come in very agitated because their stuff was really up, and one of them said that this was a week like she can't remember. And she was doing so much better just last week. And she was feeling like, wow, this is really working. And then this past week, if it could go wrong, it went wrong in spades. And as she was talking, she came upon the realization that a year or two ago, if she had had a week like this, she would have been out of commission, down in bed, depressed, withdrawn from people for a month or more. And she was able to recognize, wow, it's only been about 2 or 3 days and I'm already feeling better. So she's realizing doing the work means I'll recover quicker when my stuff comes up. It doesn't mean I get to the point where I don't have stuff. It means I see benefits all the way along. And I'm still going to need the tools. I'm still going to be able to be triggered. So that was something I wanted to add from last night. It was a wonderful realization that it's important. I really think it's important for us as we're working at this to stop from time to time, take a breath, and do an assessment and realize how far we've come. Because the ego will always want to tell us, oh, look, you got triggered again. You still have anger issues. What good are those tools? You might as well save yourself the time. And a solid assessment of my progress can give me what I need to realize, wow, things really are getting better. Even if right now my stuff is up, I have more tools to deal with it. It's not as intense, or even if it's more intense, I know it's going to resolve more quickly if I do the next right thing.
Absolutely, and also the point that when she said the week before she just had an awesome week, what that would say to me also is that she probably has hit a new level of vitality and clarity in her process. And being at a new level of vitality and clarity means oftentimes that now the next layer is going to move. What yesterday I kept hidden from myself because I couldn't have handled it if it had moved, now that I'm at a new level of vitality, I get to move it. And so that's as it should be. And so when one is flying high, you know, makes a major breakthrough and they're feeling the flow of liberated endorphins and Keflins, it's literally a chemical high from within, then one can feel fairly safely assume that it probably won't be long before another layer will come up. And as we learn to soften and open, those layers move more quickly, more easily, with more grace, and life just keeps moving in a forward direction. So it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, we discussed that, the vitality meter and the recognition that even though it doesn't feel good, it's exactly what I want to have happen, because I can't move to the next level unless I drop some more of the baggage.
Right, cool. Well, if you're on one of those stations that we can't see you in our control panel, or if you're in the chat room and you'd like to talk with us, our call-in number is 516-418-5786. And if you're on the line and you have a question for us, if you push 1, then we'll be having a conversation. You're next in line without any waiting. So push that 1 button. If Gail and Dr. Tim T and I were in your town at your local, you know, library or university or pub or whatever it was, and doing the presentation, at the end of the presentation, as we stepped off the platform, what question would you have for us? What would you want to know about this vitality meter? What would you want to know about holding the active space of love? What would you want to know about recovery? And if you could ask the question, we will open the space for the answer to show up and do our best to support you in moving right along in your process to the next level, to the next piece of your puzzle. And, of course, oftentimes your questions will move one or all of us to the next level in our process, which is one of the other blessings of getting to do this show on a daily basis, year after year after year. And we're just about on the cusp of heading into our 7th year, which is pretty awesome when I think how quickly the time goes by. 7 years. Next month. Oh, not next month. January. So, Jeannie, anything happening there?
No, there's no hand up. I was just typing to Michelle. She was talking about the movie Arrival and the lady going through the pain and the sadness and the grief and all of those feelings and being willing to face her fear and to move forward. And I was just typing out, did she also realize that, not give it away since some of the listeners may not have seen it yet, but that part of the movie hadn't happened yet, that she was actually seeing the future. And yet, knowing what was going to happen, she was still willing to go through it.
Willingness is definitely one of the keys. Definitely one of the keys. And, you know, the words that we engage in are a powerful indicator of the direction that our lives are going to go. If our words are moving in the direction of some form of hostility or fear, then rest assured that's where life is going. That's where the experience of life is going to move. And as you look at any given issue in your life where maybe there is some hostility or fear and you engage in the forgiveness process, what happens is that the end result of the words that produce the result collapses. And when that collapses, you get to drop down underneath into the hidden parts of the mind. You know, Yeshua says every idle word will be accounted for. Pay attention to the words that you use, because the words that you use are literal frequencies that become in the mind. neuropeptides are showing in the cell biologist laboratory that when you think a thought, that thought produces a neuropeptide, an actual chemical, or at least what the world calls a chemical. It's a frequency. And that frequency, when it becomes the governing frequency in your system in regard to any given circumstance, then you will tend to experience the result of that particular frequency. I'm reminded, or I think about a friend who, well, this goes back probably, gee, I'm not even sure now, 7 or 8 years ago. We're out in Washington State, and we have a friend there who's an osteopath, and they were having a funeral for his son. And his son loved motorcycles, repaired motorcycles, rode motorcycles all his life, and he ended up in a head-on collision, literally with a Mack truck. And during the celebration ceremony for his son, a lot of his old school friends came to the celebration, and one of his high school buddies brought a read a paper that he had kept from high school. So he'd gone to high school with this guy who's now in his early 50s and just died in this accident, apparent accident. And he read, as part of his speaking about his friend, this paper. And the paper that he'd written when he was in high school spoke about how he wanted to ride motorcycles all over America, see the whole country. And then when he was finished, and he used these words, he said, "I want to be sieved through the radiator of a Mack truck." He wrote that when he was, I don't know what grade in high school, grade 10, 11, 12, something like that. So he'd have been maybe 16, 17, 18 years of age, and here he is at 50. And what happened? Literal head-on collision with the Mack truck. Yeshua says every idle word will be accounted for. So one of the things to really be aware of in the recovery process is that you are willing to let go of old speech patterns that come out of the hostility and fear and recover the language of a human being, the language that is based in love. Once again, in Hacksaw Ridge, it's interesting how many opportunities this young man, who is just the epitome of a human being, and in the face of every kind of circumstance that for other people that would say that just enrages me or whatever, he keeps his words loving, gentle, and respectful for everybody involved. And ultimately to live a true human life, to recover a true human life, your words are going to have to be consistent. And this is a very powerful place to focus your work, is to really watch your language and your words. And when you see yourself heading down a road that you know is going to produce results that are not the ones that are going to support you in recovery, then you begin to change your language. And that also may mean that you're going to change the community that you hang out with, because you can't hang out in a community where the conversations are about hostility and rage and pain and blame and trauma and, you know, vengeance and all those sorts of things. You can't hang out in that community and expect not to get any on you. And so a part of the recovery process, and I think that a very powerful part of it, maybe Gail, if you're still with us, you'd have some thoughts about this, but the fact that, 90 days, first 90 days and a meeting a day, and then for the rest of your life, a meeting a day. And I think a very powerful part of that is hearing the languaging of those who have broken through to real human life and are functioning out of the principles and out of love. And, you know, we know from laws of living, there's a thing we talk about in laws of living, we spend a lot of time on this topic of regulatory speech, and that regulatory speech is literally the speech, the use of words that controls cellular chemistry, controls physiology, controls perception, controls the creative process. So the speech we use tends, and we trace this in laws of living, that we tend to hear the speech in the outer world. Now, just hearing it, you know, actually there's one of the questions, laws of living is done in the Socratic method of questions. One of the questions is, so the speech that I hear often then becomes my regulatory speech. It's like, no, that's just the first stage of regulatory speech. You can hear something a million times, and it doesn't become part of the regulatory system. But the speech proceeds from the external, hearing it, to where one begins to utilize the speech themselves. So you'll notice somebody who's got a pretty clean vocabulary gets in with the, quote, what's been called the wrong crowd, and it's not long before they're talking just like the rest of the crowd. You know, the kid comes home and the parents look at them and they're like, Charlie, what happened to you? What's going on here? You've never spoken like this before. So the next step is that one engages in and uses a speech that's going to end up setting them in a negative direction. It's still not regulatory speech yet. Then that speech proceeds to where it becomes silent speech. One speaks it to themselves inside their minds. And then if behaviors linked to that speech are experienced to at least temporarily reduce stress, then that becomes regulatory speech. And so oftentimes the crowd we hang out with is in part at least responsible for what reduces stress. And so if you're hanging out with quote-unquote what's been called the wrong crowd, the hostile and fear-based crowd, then the tendency will be that you'll come to experience, you know, when the speech is in the negative direction, is in that hostility framework, and, you know, the pressure's up and people are ganging up on somebody, then they experience a release of stress when they go along with the crowd. That's peer pressure. Peer pressure is one of the keys to speech becoming regulatory speech, and that speech takes over and determines the creative process of one's life. So really important to watch where your language goes and what you do with your words. And certainly preferable if you select, you know, where I want to live. I want to live a loving, productive life. Then you really want to go out and hang out with people who are living loving, productive lives, because that speech is going to rub off. That frequency, that energy is going to tend to become part of your habitual patterns. And so key part in the whole process is watch where your speech is going. And is Gail there? Jeannie, I'm just wondering if she has anything to report on that idea from people going to meetings, if that's ever been discussed or recognized in the 12-step groups.
Yes, she's still
absolutely
on.
I'm still here. It's just a matter of, you know. Oh, absolutely. The language in the 12-step world changes as well. When I first started going to meetings, you know, talking about the higher power, talking about different steps, talking about what we call prayers, but are actually technically, you know, petitions to God. The language around the tables is different than the language around in the streets, so to speak. And then from going to different 12-step groups, the language is different. The language is different in AA than it is in NA. The phraseologies in NA would be, I'm clean and sober. Just in AA, it would be, I'm sober. Just different ways to talk and acknowledge language. It's the same language within the people around the tables. And then different meetings around the country, the language is different there as well. Different readings, different ways of doing things, different kinds of meetings. As far as the 90-90, I think I'd mentioned this before, and there's also has been different experiences shared on the radio show around that particular phraseology. My experience has been that that is a treatment center term. It's not necessarily an AA term or a recovery term. And it's more of a, and I agree with you with getting that not that mindset going to go to a meeting a day for 90 days, to get that habit established of going to a meeting. What I was taught, what I've seen quite a bit, and what I've experienced, and I'm just coming from my experience, is that I've seen a lot of people go to 90-90, and then on day 91, they stop. But I've also heard other people talk about that that was a huge accomplishment for them, and it did set that habit into space, into place for them, and they continued on. But I was just told to go to a meeting a day. I was told to go to a meeting a day and to go until I wanted to go. And the reward for me when I was willing to go to a meeting every day, because I was in so much pain and I needed to have that pain alleviated in a different manner than putting the chemicals into my body. And so I was starting to get that relief by going every day and looking forward to going every day and finding my people and becoming attracted to different people that had what I wanted, and getting into that routine of seeing those people every day and finding my people and finding more of my people and expanding what I was doing in that modality. That was what was really important for me, and that's what I've been able to maintain throughout my sober career, so to speak. It was to maintain that meeting a day and having my schedule based on that meeting a day. And now my schedule is based on who am I going to help, who do I sponsor, who am I going to meet with, when am I going to meet with them, and what meeting is attached to meeting with them and doing step work with them. So that's my contribution there.
Fabulous, fabulous. And, you know, when I hear the 90 and 90, it's me, and you know, we shifted the homework in Laws of Living to go beyond 6 weeks because of the new research that says to establish a new habit, it takes, I'm thinking it's 76 days now. I'm remembering correctly. I may not have that number exactly right, but to me, the 90 and 90 is somewhat similar to, we suggest people who start doing the worksheet process do 5 a day for 40 days, establishing a habit. And then, of course, once they have a pattern established, they carry on. I mean, we've got, you know, Julie's been doing worksheets 5 a day for over 25 years. Patrick, who you've met a couple of times here when you've been here in the summer, you know, he's in he's 18 going on 19 years of 5 a day. And so that's definitely the idea of establishing a habit and then making that habit one's own and really being part of a community. You know, that's such a key to the healing process, is community. So awesome. Well, Jeannie, you tell me you've got a hand up in there?
Yes, we sure do. It is area code 248. Is this Miss Michelle?
Hi there.
Hi.
Hi,
young lady. Welcome. Good to hear your voice.
Thanks. So I had come across an article on Synchrony, and there was some really interesting...
An article on... I didn't catch the word.
I hang up here for a second. It doesn't want to present itself. Synchrony. Like synchronicity.
Synchronicity? Okay.
I guess the single form, or I don't know.
Okay.
Anyways.
Got it.
My text disappeared, so I apologize. Okay, here we go.
What came through in the chat room says S-Y-B-C-H-R-O-N-Y, couldn't he? And I don't know if that's a typo or what, but that was what came through on the chat room.
S-Y-N-C-H-R-O-N-Y. How would you pronounce that, Michael?
Synchrony, I guess.
Yeah. So there was a little story that opened up the article that I wanted to share with you because I thought it might springboard the conversation when you had first had invited people to call in when you're speaking at an event and, you know, what might you be interested in discussing. So there was a granny who had a brace of flying ducks. They spent most of their time sitting and resting on a nearby shed watching the neighborhood. Every now and then, Granny would catch a duck for dinner. She threw duck food on the ground and waited for them to come closer until she was able to catch one after a short chase. Years passed, and Granny no longer had the strength to chase ducks, but she had an idea. She pulled a few feathers from each duck tail to stop them flying away from her. It solved that problem, but what happened next was totally unexpected. Whoop.
Computers are so much fun when they cooperate, aren't they?
No, it's, you know, I have a touch screen. I apologize.
I understand.
The new generation of ducks born from non-flying parents did not even try to fly. They had all the feathers they needed to be able to fly, but no one to show them that they could. The best they could do with their wings was merely correct their balance or fly just above the ground, which felt more like fast running. They led their lives in a flat world, never being aware of the true potential of their wings.
Nothing like having the modeling of what's possible, is it?
Many generations of ducks had passed, and one day a new duck flew over from far away. It quickly showed Granny's ducks that what their wings are for, and within short time they could fly too. They were amazed by true potential of their wings. They were flying high, feeling safe, free, and powerful, enjoying a new perspective. Can you imagine that feeling? Do you know you are equipped with a sense which helps you to create more harmony, peace, and love in your life? A sense which underlies all other senses and gives you the ability to choose happiness. You are relying on this sense every day, but without realizing its full potential, like a duck who does not know it can fly. I call it a sense of synchrony. I hope you will soon realize that you can easily understand what synchrony means, and more importantly, you can recognize when synchrony happens. Then you will be only one step away from learning how to allow more synchrony into your life. So, according to the Oxford Dictionary, synchrony is a simultaneous action, development, or occurrence. It is a state of operating or developing according to the same time scale as something else. I would suggest to simplify it a bit and say that synchrony is when two or more behave as one. The best example to explain it is rowing. If you picture a team of rowers rhythmically moving their oars, you would quickly understand what behaving as one means. Think about people dancing together to the same rhythm, chanting or doing Mexican wave on the stadium, singing in a choir, marching in a column, or clapping after a concert. So then, at this point, they go on to show a short video to visually, auditorily demonstrate that principle. It goes on, the same can happen in a less mechanistic and more emotional dimension. Think about the mother feeling for her baby and living through her baby's ups and downs, of course, sometimes for too long. There are whole nations going through the same emotional events together. Euphoria when a national team is winning, or shared sadness when someone important dies. We say we gel with someone, we are on the same wavelength, or we are in tune with each other. falling in love or being in love is another example. When we are in true love, we are ready to commit ourselves completely. It's because we feel we're like one organism, and whatever happens to our partner happens to us. By improving his or her life, we improve our own. The same applies to a group of real friends who are happy only when everyone in the group is happy. They are naturally kind and helpful to each other. Many team players report that when they are well teamed, I would say synchronized, with the rest of the team, some kind of magic happens. They start feeling connected and energized, being able to perform a lot better. It's easy to notice an emotional component of haka, and I guess that's a term in sports. You know, actually, I'm reading this, and it just reminded me of A Course in Miracles, this idea of shared interests. So I, you know, there's more to share. I don't know if you want me to continue or, like, leave it at this point to maybe post or read yourself further or comment. Michael?
Excuse me, I have my mute button on. Do you have a website? People can tap into
it? Yeah, it's wakeupworld.com is the website, and this is an article that got posted actually, I think about a year ago. I'll have to double check. They actually show the Wolf of Wall Street about how, like, they all got together and they're beating on their chest, and then interestingly show some aboriginal, like, tribes doing very what you would, you know, might look at first like a National Geographic demonstration of primitive behavior, you know, with these, you know, ferocious tribesmen, you know, dancing and chanting and acting all foolish, and then they fast forward to this football team, you know, like soccer football, where all the men are doing this synchronized dance and a chant, and it's kind of like, you know, getting them all, like, you know, jazzed up and pepped and adrenaline, you know, before their big, you know, world championship match. And it's like, you're like, oh my God, same guys, different day. And but there's some really, really deep, I guess, poignant aspects when they go further to show metronome. And do you know what those are? The little machine kind of that like sync time, and they like kind of, yep. I think they use them in music to count beats. So they'll sure. show if they, you know, put them like, you know 20 on a board and have them all starting at different tempos, that because they're sharing the vibrational frequency through the medium of the board they're all on, that in short order all the gentle movements and, you know, the energetic patterns right between them allow them to synchronize, and then they click together in that rhythm. And so there's an amazing analogy, metaphoring what happens, you know, during an experiment, let's say, of these metronomes about how synchrony happens, and then, you know, bullet point by bullet point, comparing it to how that would translate in real life. And it pretty much, like, mirrors all the principles, you know, whether Aramaic forgiveness, you know, Way of Mastery, A Course in Miracles, Guy Finley, like just another way, and another look, a way to look at the prism from a different angle that might, you know, resonate and kind of fully more integrate all of the stuff that is all of the above, right?
Well, it's an illustration to me of the whole idea, once again, of community and the idea of a community of support in recovery, whether one's doing forgiveness work or one's doing 12-step work, that there's a tendency to for there to be an energy exchange, as with the metronomes. You know, if you got 100 metronomes in a room and you start them all at a different time, I don't know how long it takes, 24 hours later, if you go in, they're all moving at exactly the same rate because of that energy exchange. Another interesting example of that is that if a group of women, let's say, move into a college dorm, that over time, that group of women will tend to synchronize their menstrual cycles, and they'll all menstruate at the same time. It's all energy. And that's just another example of it. So,
Boogie, did you see from all the news articles about the accidents, the injury, and the flooding, and the tides, and everything related to the super moon on Monday, and the medic pool that, you know, had a, you know, above average impact on our physical world. I'm looking forward here, and I think this, we, if it's okay, there's 5 minutes. I'd like to share the bullet points.
Go for it.
Okay, so they're looking at the experiment and they're defining the key points. First, it happens between independent oscillators, the metronomes. The word independent means that each oscillator has its own source of energy and can move without help or influence of others. Secondly, it requires medium, something which connects metronomes and allows them to communicate. Thirdly, it happens on its own. Metronomes do not do synchronization. It happens to them. Fourthly, it needs time. And finally, when one of the metronomes loses synchrony and becomes alienated, it has a chance to resynchronize as long as it's connected with the rest. So then when they, you know, apply it to friends and lovers and the synchrony that emerges between oscillators. So firstly, they should stay independent, respect each other, and give themselves freedom to leave. And I would probably say to choose, like if you were looking at these politics. Secondly, they would have to be connected by a common medium. It could be a passion, regular activity, same interest, same ideas, same type of music, etc. It can be many of those mediums, and they may change with time. Thirdly, they cannot make true friendship or love. They can only let it happen to them. If one of them tries to force it, usually having their own egotistic agenda, friendship or love will never be true and unconditional. Fourthly, they have to stay connected for some time, usually going through many ups and downs before they feel they are best friends or true lovers. Finally, when one of them goes away, they still have a chance to reestablish friendship as long as they stay connected. So the mechanical process has the emotional dimension there, and they're just showing the link. So, you know, you mentioned the sense of community, and they have it applying towards, you know, personal relationships, special relationships. You know, and it goes on and talks about how all it is a bunch of electricity firing off in your little brain there, and not much more than that, quantum physics.
It's all energy. It's all. All the when we start to see life through the eyes of energy, relationship, business, theology, disease, health, if we start to see it through the eyes of energy, everything changes. And, of course, you know, there is one piece of the puzzle that the Greeks had down pat, and that was guard the portals of the mind. Be careful where you synchronize your mind, because that's where your life is going to go. So it becomes a key part in the whole process. And of course, modeling something that perhaps a community has never seen before, as with the ducks, opens a space for that to move throughout the community. And that's why we keep moving higher and higher in this community that we're building here, to bring forward what's really, really possible for human beings. And that's why we've suggested in the last few days, especially the movies that we have, as a way to model and see, wow, this isn't something the world generally shows us. And certainly opens a space for possibility. And the possibility is that we could be living on a planet with 7.5 billion people who open their eyes every morning and experience the bliss and the ecstasy of the active presence of love, firing every cell in their bodies, moving out into the world and touching others with that presence of love and building from there. If we start to do that, who knows how high we'll fly. that's the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings.